You're listening to episode 2.50 of the Midlife Improvement Project, and on this week's episode, I'll catch you up on what I've been up to lately, and then I'll share a great interview where I chat with Lisa Boat, who will help you to get comfy in your empty nest. Let's go. Welcome to the Midlife Improvement Project, a podcast about what really matters as you negotiate midlife. Some might call this time of life a crisis, but I want to introduce you to the idea that it's an awakening. This is a time to listen to your soul, to find your purpose, to reflect on what you really want to do and be in the days you have left here on planet Earth, and then write your own midlife manifesto. You are not less of yourself on the other side of midlife. You are more. I'm your midlife wake-up coach, Dr. Peggy Malone. I'm a healthcare provider turned life coach who helps women in midlife lean into the magic of being a woman as we head into the second half. I help you to decide where you want to go next with this one precious life and really claim all of your big dreams and goals while caring less about what anyone else thinks about it. After all, if someone is going to be unhappy with your life, it shouldn't be you. In 2023, I reached the milestone of turning 50, and I want to use this podcast as my midlife manifesto. There will be no fading into the background and quietly living out my golden years with the assumption that my best years are behind me over here. I'm just getting started. I invite you to come with me. Listen in each week as I help you to wake up to what's possible for you in midlife as you learn to increase your self-awareness and your confidence, get curious about what got you here, and then get clear about where you want to go next on the way to being an even better you. Let's get after it. Well, hello, friends. It's been 3 weeks since I've been in your ears, so I wanted to give you a quick update on all of the adventures that I've been up to since the last episode went live. John and I have been on a spree of fun adventures so far in 2024. We were in Western Canada for 2 weeks in January snowboarding, which was so fun. Then we did a long weekend getaway to Cape Coral, Florida a few weekends ago to stay with some friends who have a place there. It was nice to get some sun on our faces. We ate delicious seafood. We went for some boat rides. We hung out by the pool and we just had an overall great time. It was awesome. Then, the first weekend in March was for the ladies. On the Friday, I met up with my friend Lori, who I've known since we played varsity basketball together at the University of Guelph way back in the day in the early 90s. We connected at least once per year to do a day of what we call hashtag old lady snowboarding together. We had a great day at Blue Mountain in Collingwood and we had a lovely time catching up. And later that day, I met up with two friends, Jamie and Heather, who I get together with a couple of times a year for some fellowship, fun, personal growth, and just amazing girl time. And this time, we did the most cool experience. We started with a hot yoga class, and then we went and did a sauna and cold plunge experience. Now, I know that if you're listening, you are into personal growth, and so you have seen a bunch of different people playing and experimenting with cold water immersion. I have too, when I'm looking at the internet. And I have to tell you that up until this weekend, I was intrigued enough to watch, to learn the physiological benefits, and also to cheer on the people who were doing this, but I was absolutely not interested in putting my body into cold water on purpose. So John and I have a joke that we like to share about the temperature of our backyard pool, and it's this. When we were deciding on what temperature the pool would be, I wanted it to be 85 degrees Fahrenheit, and John wanted it to be 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and we met in the middle at 85 degrees Fahrenheit. So, cold water is not my jam. Or so I thought. So here's how this experience went. We arrived to this country lot that had shipping containers and a campfire in between them. In one of the shipping containers, there was a sauna, and in the other one, there was a cold plunge tub. Its temperature was about 40 degrees Fahrenheit or 4 degrees Celsius, also known as effing cold. And there was ice floating on the top of the water in there as well, just to make sure that I would be even more nervous. So anyway, we got into the sauna for about 20 minutes to get warm, and then we discussed what was going to happen. So let me tell you, my friends, I was activated. I was so nervous and dreading it. I asked if I could go first because I just needed to get it over with. And once we were in the room beside the cold plunge tub, I was standing beside the tub and there was no going back and I almost burst into tears. That's how activated my nervous system was. Anyway, I did it. I stepped one foot in, I stepped my other foot in, and then I went right down, right up to my neck. And then I stayed there for 2 minutes. The first 15 seconds, my breathing jacked up and my nervous system freaked out. And then I regulated a bit and I could look around the room and make some jokes with the girls and sing along to the song that I had picked for my plunge. And I picked Miley Cyrus's new song called Doctor, Work It Out. If you haven't heard that song, check it out. It's a gooder. Anyway, my friends did a countdown and out I got, and I felt like a total badass. I was so proud of myself that I did that thing that I absolutely did not want to do. Then Heather and Jamie also did the plunge. They are also badass ladies. And then we went back to the sauna. And then we did the same routine two more times. So yes, I went back in again and again after that. So I'm sure I will discuss this more on another episode because the experience was kind of profound for me. But in the meantime, I'll link an episode to the Huberman Lab podcast in the show notes, or you can search it wherever you listen to podcasts. He has a really great episode where he interviews Dr. Soberg, I think is her name, Susanna Soberg. And basically it'll tell you the details if you're interested in learning more about the benefits of voluntary cold water immersion. So overall, a really great experience for me that if you had asked me the week before I did this, I would not have predicted that this would be my review after the fact. Okay, so to round out our winter adventures, when you are listening to this episode, John and I are currently in northern Michigan with some friends doing some snowboarding, and hopefully there's going to be snow. It's been quite warm and it's not great conditions, but either way, I'm sure we're going to have a good fun time. And then when we get back from that adventure, we're settling in for a calmer and more home-based spring. So that's what I've been up to lately. So let's now get into this great interview that I have for you today. Lisa Boat is founder of Lean In, Finding Your Way Home Coaching. She is a dedicated educator, certified menopause specialist, and Reiki practitioner with a passion for guiding women through life's transitional phases. She's specializing in supporting women navigating the empty nest and perimenopause / menopause journey. Lisa creates a nurturing space for self-free connection, mind, body, heart, and soul. Drawing from personal experience, Lisa resonates deeply with her clients as she traverses her own path through the empty nest and embraces the evolution of her perimenopausal body. Committed to empowering women to reclaim their inner magic, Lisa fosters environments where individuals become the main characters in their stories, deserving passion, vitality, and peace. Her mission is to facilitate transformative experiences that help women rediscover purpose, embrace change, and thrive in their newfound freedom. Well, hello, friends. If you are currently navigating midlife, I know that you are well aware that it is often a time of challenges. One that we have talked about a lot, and one that almost all of us can relate to, is that our hormones start doing weird things as we negotiate perimenopause. Another one, which is not so relevant to me because I don't have my own children, but I know is very relevant to many of my patients and clients in midlife, is that your children are growing up and they are leaving the nest. Not only are our bodies changing, but on top of that, the roles that we have been defined by for decades are shifting as our kids gain their independence and leave home. It can be definitely a time that feels destabilizing, but my guest today is here to discuss strategies to help you reclaim yourself and your life in your midlife empty nest. Let's do this. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
All right, fantastic. Why don't we start by having you share with my listeners a little bit about yourself, your story, and of course, because this is the Midlife Improvement Project, especially your midlife story.
Oh, well, my midlife story is the beating heart of what's happening in my life right now. So that's not an issue. So midlife really has been this time of massive transformation in my life. And it's for a couple of reasons. So one, I was an educator for 20 years. And during COVID, like everyone, I had one of those moments of how do I want to live the rest of my life? And when I really started thinking about my life in the education world, that wasn't it. I no longer wanted to feel like I was never enough. It's an impossible job that is never, ever finished. And my personality doesn't do well with that. And so I knew that if I wanted to have a really fulfilling next chapter, I needed to start doing something differently. And at the same time, perimenopause was starting to happen to me physically, and my children were getting into their late teen years. And I had not anticipated that the shift that happens from being a mom who's really engaged and needed and is in that really heavy and intense time flips on a dime almost. And for me, it happened when my oldest son got his driver's license and suddenly he was out in the world and I had time that I hadn't had in 16 years. And I started thinking, I was reflecting one morning, I still remember it, like it's imprinted on my brain. I was sitting outside on the back deck with a cup of tea and I went, huh, I'm on the other side of everything I had ever imagined for my life. Wow. But I feel the most vital that I have ever felt in my life. So I started talking to friends to see if they were having similar experiences. And shockingly, turns out they were as well. But there's not a lot of story and narrative about what this phase of womanhood looks like. So that's where the work that I am doing now was born. So I'm a certified menopause coach and a transformational coach. So I work with women who are going through both that physical change and that emotional change. And for the most part, they intersect.
Okay, fantastic. I love all of this. And it's very much what we talk about on this podcast. And so I'm so excited that you're here to talk about this. So you've already sort of touched on the edges of it, but in your experience, what are some of the common struggles that women are facing when they're in this intersection, when they got that empty nest phase, as well as menopause, like showing her face? How do we navigate this time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really challenging because when people come to me, essentially the place they're at is one, what is going on with my body? And two, who am I? And what do I even want? Because for the most part, women don't ask themselves this question, right? Like I have talked about this a lot on my own show where I did everything I was supposed to do. I followed the recipe that was laid out ahead of me, right? I went straight to university. Then I went to a professional school. Then I went right into having a career, marriage, kids. Like I did the thing.
I checked all the boxes.
Exactly. And it's not that I regret any of that. I really don't. It's brought me to this really beautiful place. And at the same time, I was making choices that were influenced by other people. Even though I felt like I was making my own choices, when I look back and really reflect on it, I didn't ever want to be a teacher. My dad was, and I watched the way it took over his whole life. And I knew I did not want that for myself. And yet, when I graduated from university, there was a lot of pressure to, you know, get things going right away. And so I went, and because I loved kids, so there was that element of it. I loved working with kids. I went to teacher's college. I did the thing. And eventually the system of education became the thing that I could no longer tolerate. And it was only when I had time where I wasn't trying to work through, like, how do I make my day work so I can care for all the people that need to be cared for in my world? When that is our main focus, we don't get a chance to ask ourselves, but what do I really want? And so in this time, I got to start asking myself, what do I really want? So that's essentially where I start with clients, is going inside, figuring out what are the parts that are showing themselves, that are saying, hey, we can't maintain this kind of self-abandonment. And what can we do to start changing that? So one of the first things I do is I work with clients to develop a menopause manifesto, which is working through a series of questions to get really clear about what matters most in that person's life. And then we essentially write a mantra that creates the foundation for any decisions going forward. If it doesn't fit with this mantra and what I have decided is going, what the rest of my life is going to look like, or well, the rest of the life is a long time, the next chapter. If it doesn't fit with this statement, with my menopause manifesto, then it's a no. And so it really helps with making those decisions to stay true to what you really want.
Oh my gosh, I love this so much. It reminds me of, because I talk about the midlife manifesto. So this is like probably something similar. And yeah. I also like, there's something about the way that you described it with what I've seen with clients and patients and other people who've come on the podcast talk about this, you know, this mom treadmill that people are on forever, where they're like, they don't have time to worry about themselves because like, I got to keep going forward. And mm-hmm. then there's something also about the way you said that, like, you were sort of like, I guess, shepherded into your career versus like intentionally choosing it. There's something magic about midlife where it's finally the time for a lot of women where they can decide what they want to be when they grow up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is why I position this time as, yes, there are uncomfortable things that happen, right? Like, nobody likes waking up in a pool of sweat. That sucks. However, it also is a time of great liberation. Like, liberation from this like demanding cycle that your body goes through monthly, liberation from although while we're going through perimenopause, we have a lot of really fluctuating emotions as progesterone and estrogen shift and change. But when we come through to menopause, we get back to this place that is who you were premenstrual. Right. So when you think back to, for me, I was one of the early folks who started menstruating when I was 11. So I've been in this racket for a long time. But when I think back to that girl, there are so many things I can't wait to bring forward from her again. Her sense of joyfulness, her sense of play, her sense of just like not having responsibility in terms of having to protect my body at all times to make sure that the decisions are mine around what my body is doing and what I'm producing. So going back to what I said earlier, yeah, there's some hard things, there's some challenges, but if we can position it as this time of liberation, it's also really exciting.
It's so neat that you're saying that, because one of the questions that I often ask guests when they come on the show, and it's related to this, is mm-hmm. I think probably culturally, we all have this idea that it's a crisis. And after this, I'm just going downhill and I'll become invisible. Right. So yeah. When you have that as part of your conditioning, you're scared of it and you don't think it's going to be something amazing. So when you think of it instead of a crisis as an awakening or a liberation, well, now we can get excited about it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's what happens when, I mean, so many things around women's health are pathologized, right? So it's the pathologization of menopause and what that does in terms of making it like a medical condition that needs to be solved. And it's not that there aren't physical elements to it that are real and need treatment, but it's different for everyone. And it is definitely not the end. Right. Once you get yourself into places where you have really good routines that support stress management, sleep, nutrition, and fitness, that's the foundation that, and actually, if you have listeners who are in their late 20s and early 30s, that's the best time to get those routines in place, because the stronger your foundation of self-care routines are, the more smoothly you move through perimenopause and menopause for the most part. So once we have those things in place, we can actually feel really good. And it definitely isn't the end, but because all of the value it culturally is placed on women when they are in their reproductive years, it's a time for us. I feel like it is the work of the women of our generation, thanks to the leadership of women who went before us, who got us to this place, that we get to reclaim this time. We get to stand up and say, so no, this is not the end. Actually, this is our beginning, and watch out. Because when you have an entire generation of women who are standing up and going, no, you're going to look at us, you're going to listen to us, and you're going to watch us lead. That is like the most exciting thing I can possibly imagine.
Oh my God, I feel emotional when you're talking about it, Lisa. This is amazing. And it also reminds me, and this is one of those things that, especially for women who are like most women who'd be listening to this, who like basically are in a place socioeconomically where they're safe and they have good housing and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. The the graph of life satisfaction is not like going downhill after 50. And in fact, it's going uphill after 50. 50 is the hardest time. Like that's when all of the things come together, just as we're talking about. It's the time when we can then wake up to like this beautiful couple of decades later. I'm so excited about what's coming next. And I'm what you're doing and the way you just described it. And hopefully the message that I'm putting out with this podcast will inspire mm-hmm. all of these women of our generation to stand up and be like, right, this is how we do it.
Yeah.
I'm pumped.
Yeah. It feels like that shift is starting to happen. Like when you start paying attention, you start noticing that media messaging is starting to shift. There are, you know, women who are in the zeitgeist that are starting to stand up and do that. I was watching this conversation between Cory Booker and Halle Berry just the other day. It came up in my Instagram feed.
Oh, yes.
Exactly. So they were talking about the need for research into women's health and menopause in particular, and how are we supporting this throughout the workplace as well. And that's a little bit where actually this is new. It's just sort of starting to percolate for me, but a little bit where my focus is starting to shift to, and that is how do we work with organizations and corporations to make workplaces that are women's health friendly? So what kind of policies need to be in place? How do we support? Because there's so much inequity in all of the areas, but women's health is not something that has ever been at the center of good policy for working. And the female workforce is massive in this country and in the United States. And what it could look like if there was really good support in place that valued this phase and valued the wisdom of leadership of women in this phase and gave space for, you know what? Yeah, you might have a hot flush while you're at work, which is really uncomfortable when you're in front of a group of people. So let's have a space where you can go to, because there's ways that we can solve and make this more comfortable, but it needs to be structural changes that happen in our society. So that's kind of where I'm starting to shift my gaze to is how, and then it also reaches more women, right? Because not everybody can have the resources to access a coach, but if you can access it through your workplace, that makes a really significant shift.
Oh my goodness. Yes, you're exactly right. And I think that there is some inklings of that starting to percolate, as you said. So mm-hmm. hopefully what we'll see over the next couple of decades is that just becomes more normalized. And it's just for, you know, our little girls who are just growing up now, it'll just be like, oh, when you turn 50, this is like the coolest time of life. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of it being shrouded in mystery, right? Yeah. Like so many people say to me, yeah, like I'm just working through it with my friends and nobody really knows and it's really secretive. And in some ways, some people have related it to when people first get their period. Sorry. And that same sort of thing happens, right? It's like, unless you had a family who was really supportive and, you know, gave you information around, hey, this is what's going to happen to your body. And when it does, come and talk to us. I don't know that that was the general experience for most women in our phase of life. So there was a lot of that, like trying to figure it out. We knew the basics, but women's bodies are so complex and the way it impacts everyone is so different that there still was this like secret, it's like the secret society, the secret culture of trying to figure out what the heck is happening with us. And sort of the same thing is happening again, but there are so many people who have really good knowledge who can actually tell you, right? Who can work with you. Look at the one human in front of you. It's one of the things I appreciated about the menopause course that I took that was so powerful was that, yes, there are standards of practice and yes, there is a range of symptoms that can happen, but it's so different. We focus on the human in front of us and really create specific plans for this human who's going through whatever symptoms they happen to be experiencing. So it's important to know that there are knowledge keepers out there who can demystify everything that is happening for you.
What you're describing hits very hard for me because I'm a healthcare provider. And in my early years as a healthcare provider, I had patients that were in their 40s and 50s, and I just didn't have the knowledge. We learned like a little bit about it in school, and I have learned through all of the knowledge that I've come across in the last couple of years that medical professionals of all kinds are in the same boat. Unless they've specifically studied it or specifically have certifications, they have no idea. They're just like dealing with whatever symptom is coming up and they're suppressing it. So, yes. Which is what they do. So it's interesting that you say that it's the secret society, because even for me, before I started digging into it deeper, I was just having conversations with my friends and my patients. And then that's when I was like, oh, like now it's relevant to me. I got to dig into this. Mm-hmm. And so people that don't have that resource, like I have, would probably just be floundering. So I'm so grateful that there are people like you that have these certifications that can help women like this. Before I get into a little bit more about what you specifically do, I just wanted to say this because it occurred to me when you were talking about coming into this time of life. I have found myself, even as I'm, you know, putting out a message where hopefully it's helpful for other women going through this process, feeling this like sadness or grief around this time of life, which mm-hmm. I think maybe relates a little bit to some of the sadness and grief that's coming up for women around empty nest. So what are your thoughts on this? And I'm sure you have some, so please.
Oh, I sure do. Actually, I'm really glad you asked that question. Thank you. Because it's important to acknowledge that, yes, like I said earlier, it's a time of liberation. It can be a time of celebration. And at the same time, there absolutely is this overwhelming sense of grief, right? Like I said at the beginning, I found myself on the other side of everything I'd ever imagined for my life. That is something that is painful, right? It's like all of these dreams that I had, everything that I had imagined, it's transpired. And now I'm in a place, yes, I get to make decisions for myself. And it's also super destabilizing because I wrote a post about this not too long ago, but I was driving and a song had come on the radio that I hadn't heard in ages. And it immediately took me back to driving with my little boys in their car seats in the back. We were, you know, on a road trip somewhere. And I remembered how secure I felt because I was in this place where it was, you know, young motherhood is really well documented in society. Yes, everybody has a different experience of it, but we have a general idea of what it looks like, right? So it felt secure because I knew exactly what I was doing. I was in a very traditional job. I felt secure in my role of motherhood. I was exhausted and I was tired and all those things, but it felt known. And so when we get on the other side of that, we're like launched into this great unknown. And that is really hard. And culturally, we're not very good around aging and death in particular, right? Like we kind of get to a point like where this menopause thing starts happening. And you said it earlier, and I think you're absolutely bang on. We're like, oh, menopause, my body's breaking down and I'm going to die. Yeah. Right? Like, yes, death is coming for all of us eventually, but we also are in a time where we are living much longer health spans, which is why it's so important to really get into those spaces and figure out where is the grief coming from? Acknowledge it, be with it. Don't try to suppress it and push it away. Be like, oh, no, no. You know, an example of this is when my son was graduating from high school and everybody kept saying to me, oh, this is so exciting. You must be feeling all of these things. And I was like, I was so mad. I was so mad at everybody who was saying that to me because yes, I'm excited for him, but God, I'm so sad for myself. I enjoy his company. I enjoy our family of four. And that dynamic is shifting and changing and I miss it. And I'm so sad. And that is also okay. It's okay to have both sets of emotions and value them both. But it's when we try to push the grief away and think, oh, I shouldn't be feeling that. That's when it's going to keep bubbling up, right? It's going to continue to manifest itself in your body eventually if we don't sit with it and feel it. So the grief component is important. And it's why I think that a menopause ritual, bringing that back into our society, is really important, because rituals traditionally in culture are places where we mark significant shifts in our lives and we can, in community, experience all the emotion around that and support each other. So having spaces for women to come and, you know, it's like the men, I don't know what a title for it would be yet, but it's like, you know, this sort of menopause ritual where we talk about the grief and we talk about the liberation and we mark this phase as important and necessary.
Awesome. Yeah, I want to do that. Let's do that. Okay.
Okay. Let's do it. That sounds great.
Amazing. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do specifically with your clients as a coach?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I currently am working one-on-one, but I'm also in the process of developing a group program. So right now, when you come into my care, the first thing we do, like I said, the first session is that menopause manifesto so that we have a foundation. And then it's weekly one-on-one sessions with me. And in that session, it's really dictated by what that woman is experiencing. So whatever they need to focus on initially. So for example, right now I have one client who's really working through sleep, right? Because if our sleep routines are off, it makes everything else harder. So it's a good foundational place to start. So in our session, we work through what that person is experiencing, how it's showing up in the rest of their lives. And then we start setting some goals and strategy for how to attack that. So I created a plan for her for creating a good bedtime routine, for how to manage that. And then throughout the week, every day, I send her a text message checking in to see how that routine is starting to implement in her daily life. Because the session is great, but if there isn't accountability in your everyday, change is not sustainable. And then on Fridays, I also offer office hours so people can pop in for quick, like 10, 15 minute check-ins. Or if something has really come up for them that they need to talk out, we do that in 10 to 15 minutes on Fridays. And then the cycle starts again the next week.
Awesome. Okay. Amazing. And yeah, one of the things that I know that you do as well is you're a Reiki practitioner. So how does that fit in with your coaching, and how do you use Reiki when you're working with your clients?
Oh, that's a great question. It's kind of hard not to use it because it just sort of like flows in. And sometimes clients will book just a Reiki session, which I can do both in person and distance. Actually, sometimes I like doing distance better because you can actually focus more when you're, you know, imagining the energetic body of the other human. So sometimes they do that. Sometimes if someone comes into a session and I can tell they're really, really heightened, that's where I start with, okay, we're going to take some really deep breaths. We're going to roll our shoulders back and down. And then I also send some energetic healing at that point as well to get people back in their bodies, because that's a lot of work that we do as well, is somatic reconnection and some somatic healing, because we live so much of our life outside of our bodies, because these can be really uncomfortable places to be. So Reiki also helps me bring and ground people back into their bodies.
Okay. I love that. And I love that you have different options to deal with different people. It kind of brings me back to what you said earlier, which here's the one person in front of me. It's an N equals one. What do they mm-hmm. need today? Let's focus on that. I love it.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about women that you've worked with, or maybe there's some relationship around what you're dealing with your own kids. In mm-hmm. terms of empty nest, when that transition starts to happen, it's a bit of a tumultuous time because you're not sure like how to interact with them or what boundaries need to be put in place, how you can like comfort yourself and soothe yourself when you're going through that transition. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Oh, yeah. it's so heavy and it's so multifaceted. I will say I've always had a really good relationship with my kids. Like we've spent a lot of intentional time around the dinner table, making sure that we're always talking to each other. I made sure, because earlier in my career when my kids were little, I happened to be coaching some educators who were going through this process. All their kids were going off to university. And they had said to me, I have nothing that I do for myself. I don't know who I am. I don't know what to do. And so because I had seen them do that, I made sure that I kept showing up for myself and that my kids saw me as not just a mother, but also as a friend, as a partner, as all of the different aspects of who I am, because that is true. When we abandon ourselves and only show up as the societal monolith of mother, it becomes really challenging to have conversation with adult children. And I do have people who come to me with that problem because their kids only see them as mom and don't see them as a human being.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of unpacking that has to happen in that space and getting the woman herself comfortable in being back in her body and actually showing up in that relationship as herself. And that's where boundaries can become really, really helpful and useful in those relationships and saying, hey, yes, I am your mother and I will love you forever, but I'm also a human. And an example of how communication like that can work is last year when my oldest was 18 and he was going through the process of heading off to school. And I remember being in that place where I was a total jerk to everybody in my family because I was feeling the grief around leaving and knowing that it was going to change. And so I know, looking back now, I didn't at the time, but now I know what I was doing. I was, you know, starting to create those separations in the family. And so I saw my oldest child doing the same thing. And so one day we were both calm, like nothing was happening. There hadn't been a hard conversation or anything. And I just said, hey, can we talk? He was like, yeah. So I said, I just need you to know, like, I see what you're doing and it's totally developmentally appropriate. I get it. But it also happens to intersect with all of my rawest pain points. So I'm not asking you to change. I know that what you're doing is part of the journey, but we need to have some language to talk to each other when we're in those moments that are hot so that you're seeing that it's that I am hurting and I see that you are hurting and we find a way to talk about it in a way that is not so painful for each of us.
Wow. That's so powerful. Did you find that it's been helpful? Like, is he open to it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. It was an awareness piece for him too. Right. Because when you're in your 18-year-old teenage brain.
Yeah. You don't consider your mom as somebody that has feelings about anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness. What a gift for your clients to have this experience and to have that kind of language with your kid. Amazing. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah.
What you're describing here, like leans a little bit to what I want to ask you about next. Mm-hmm. And, what I spend a lot of time with my clients, reminding them that when a woman puts herself first, everyone around her benefits. And this mm-hmm. is something we've not been conditioned to do because we've all been conditioned that our worth is taking care of everyone else. So I am sure that you have some strategies here and I would love to hear what advice you have for women about putting themselves first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The line that I use is when you set yourself free, you set everybody else around you free as well, because there's this, you know, dynamic of, well, if she needs me, like from a child's perspective, it's like, well, she needs me. She needs me to stay in this space because she needs to stay in this caregiving role. Right. So when you let yourself come first and be actually present in your own life and show up with the things that you need, then it's like, oh, she's going to be okay. Okay. I can go and do my thing. So it starts to alleviate that. But like you said, the conditioning is really, really challenging to get around. So one of the first things I start with clients is like, one, what do you enjoy? Like, just start with one small ritual that you can do for yourself every day. And it might be as simple as, I am going to make myself a cup of my favorite tea or coffee or whatever it is. And I'm going to sit and I'm going to look out the window And it might be 10 minutes, but it's something that you are doing specifically for yourself because it's something that you love. So that ritual looks different for every person. And then often, like the first week it happens and the client comes back the next week and is like, I couldn't shut my brain off. I still kept thinking about all these things and I felt guilty that I was just sitting there. So then we start unpacking the guilt. Okay, so where is the guilt actually coming from? What issue is it that's coming to the surface when you give yourself some time to be still? So that's a lot of, I sometimes call myself a stop coach, like a stopping coach, where instead of continuing on this mill of like, go, 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 because it's a really good distraction from what's actually happening in our brains, we actually have to stop. Because it's only when we deal with the underlying emotional traumas, and traumas, you know, it's a scale, right? There's some people have experienced huge trauma, and then some people have experienced repeated trauma. But we all have been going through a collective trauma experience since 2020. So there are significant issues that start coming to the surface for people. But so starting with ritual, and then we start building in processes and strategies that build routines that actually give back to yourself. So one of the other things I'm trained in is fitness. And if we're not actually moving our bodies, it's really hard to move that energy through so that we can heal. So once we start with some, you know, rituals that are short and we can start to commit to, then we start building in, okay, so what's a movement practice going to look like? And the questions I ask around that actually are, and how does the movement feel? And we start talking about what emotions are coming up when we start to actually move. So it's a slow foundation and a slow build. Because one of the things that I find when people come to me and they say, okay, I need to stop feeling guilty. I need to work on my nutrition. I need to build a fitness routine and I need to learn how to sleep. I'm like, whoa, sister. Yes, those are all great goals. But if we attack all of them at once, do you know what's going to happen? Zero. Zero will happen. So we start with one small thing that often sounds like trite or like, really, you're telling me to have a cup of tea? Yes. Yes. Because it's manageable and it's something you can do. And then we build on that success.
I love it. This is amazing. I often will say to women, hey, if you want to, just lay on the floor and stare at the ceiling for 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if that's what's going to be, that's going to just be your me time. Like, you're allowed to do that. It's cool.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever it is, just something that you can actually do and sustain.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I love it. Can you tell us a little bit more about, I know you told us about your coaching program, about the community you serve, like who are the women you mostly work with? Are they online? Are they in person? And you said that you have a group program that's coming up. You also mentioned to me before, I'm going to get to the question, that you have a little something to offer my listeners. So can you give us sort of a roundup of all of those things?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the group program is in the works and should be ready in the spring. So you can keep an eye out for that when it's ready. Currently I'm mostly working with women online. I do offer in-person as well. So if there are people who are locally in my area, I'm happy to see them in person, but right now I'm mostly online and have clients Canada, the US for the most part. And the giveaway that I have is to join my mailing list. And to do that, you download my free guide, which is 3 reasons why you are struggling with your empty nest. And there's lots of really good, like many of the things that I talked about today are embedded in that guide. And then as part of my mailing list, also you get twice a week, Mondays, I send out something practical that you can implement in your life right away. And then on Thursdays, I also have a podcast called Transforming 45. So Thursdays, I send out my podcast episodes.
Fantastic. That sounds amazing. And where shall we go to find this? Can you give us your website and your socials so that people can come and say hi or go check it out?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is leaninfindhome.com. And on Instagram, I'm at LBoat. And on Facebook, I am Lisa Boat.
Okay. Fantastic. Any final words of wisdom that you want to share, or the one thing that people should take away from our conversation today?
Oh, gosh. one thing is always hard, but it's this: listen to your body. Get yourself into a place where it's quiet for a minute and just ask, body, what do I need to know? And it will tell you. But you actually have to get into a place where you can trust that this body is speaking to you and listen to what it's saying. But that is the number one thing to really start tapping in and doing some healing work to move forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here today, Lisa, and for sharing all of this. It's so great.
Well, thanks for having me. This was really fun.
And that's it for this episode of the Midlife Improvement Project. Thank you so much to my guest today, Lisa Boat, for sharing her story and her expertise. I hope that if you are in the phase of life where an empty nest is on the horizon, or if it's something that you are currently trying to get comfortable in, this episode has helped. If you get the feeling that I might be your coach and you are interested in learning more about me and my work and perhaps how we could work together, especially as you navigate the challenges and adventures of midlife, and you want to talk to me about how that would work and what's involved, why not sign up for a complimentary chat with me at drpeggymalone.com/coach. We can have a conversation about your goals for the remainder of 2024 and what you want to accomplish and how I can help you. Also, I'd love it if you would come and say hi on Instagram. You can find me there at Dr. Peggy Malone, and that is where you'll find me discussing my life as a 50-year-old who likes to snowboard, back handspring, and also to encourage women like you to find what is fun and adventurous for you in midlife. As usual, you'll find all of the resources and the links that were mentioned today during the show at the show notes at drpeggymalone.com/podcast. If you enjoyed today's show and you don't want to ever miss an episode, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you usually listen. And also, if you have listened to this show and you think, hey, this is a great episode, why not share it with somebody else in your life that could benefit? Until next time, my friends, stay focused and get after it.